Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Hi everybody, this is The Ruck from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks once again for joining us on our regular Monday date. I'm Stephen Jones of The Sunday Times. I'm joined by Stuart Barnes, who divides his loyalties between The Times and The Sunday Times just as well as he did between Bristol and Bath in the old days as a player. Coming up on the podcast this week, we'll be joined by none other than Premiership Rugby's Chief Executive, Simon Massey-Taylor. We'll be putting to him all the key questions, including the dread fate of Sweet Caroline, which must go. We look back on the Premier 15's final. Sarries secured another title, and none other than their captain, Marley Packer, will be with us. The Premiership's regular season is over. We know the semi-finals. Northampton secured the final playoff spot with a really exciting performance. We'll also review the final round of fixtures, look ahead to the semi-finals, both in the Premiership and the URC. Stuart, where did you venture on the weekend?
I was at Gloucester, and it was a good occasion, actually. There was a real air of relaxation because no one really thought Newcastle were going to put it up to Northampton. And, you know, it was a weak Saracens team, but I felt that it was an emphatic exclamation mark of a finish for Gloucester. And I think they can look forward to a good pre-season and I think they could be contenders in the top four next year.
Well, I was at Northampton, and always a good venue. First of all, let's revert to the Premier 15s. Won by Saracens. Player of the match, possibly as expected, was the great Marley Packer. Well, now we've got Marley with us. Marley, two tries, player of the match, title for Saracens. Life couldn't get much better, really, could it?
No, not really, and off on holiday tomorrow. So, it's pretty sweet at the moment. Really, like, over the moon with just how the team performed, but obviously myself as well, to win that championship back again.
We better not say where you're going on holiday because the paparazzi might follow you. Saracens have won it three times, and I think one of the things that you may have mentioned before the game was it must have felt brilliant because the two teams that have beaten you this year, i.e. Quins and Exeter, you saw them off in the semis and the final.
Yeah, and I think that was a massive thing for us. Obviously, the domestic season, like every team in the league are getting better and better. And there's no, like, you don't turn up to a game and think, oh, yeah, we're going to win this. But it's just by how many points. It's like we've got to turn up and we've got to put performance on and be the best version of ourselves. And Exeter, fair play to them. I think they beat us and it was the biggest scoreline against us since the league's been going. But I just think that's credit to them, but also just shows that with the Six Nations going on, obviously we lost a lot of players to the Six Nations. We picked up a few injuries during that time as well. Georgie Evans obviously broke her arm in the Bristol game a few weeks before the Six Nations. So like there was a few like key elements going into that game that weren't quite back together and ticking over. But look, we learned from that loss. We went on and then played Worcester week after, which was still a tough game. The first half was, they put quite a few points on us, but we got it back in the second half. And then to go into the semi-final and how we did, that's when it really matters. At the end of the season, when it's knockout rugby, that's when you need your team to turn up and perform. And that's certainly what we did this uh, this end of this season.
Sure. I mean, initially in the opening sort of phases of play, they really came at you. What is it about Saracens that enables you to kind of ride that out and then impose your own game? Is it experience? Is it just sort of self-belief? Is it something deep down in the squad or what?
Yeah, I think it's all of those things, to be fair. Like, the belief in our squad is unreal. We've got a winning mentality and we trust in what we do. Obviously, it wasn't ideal for them to come at us for those first phases. I think it was like nearly 2 minutes worth. Like, I think it was like 10 phases they got up to, maybe plus. Mm. But look, we just trust in what we do. We're sometimes a team, and if you look at us throughout the season, that actually it isn't until a team scores first against us or something happens where we got our back up against the wall that we actually come out fighting and firing. Mm-hmm. And we have talked a lot about that this season. How can we get that switch to happen in the warm-up so we're ready and we're firing? It doesn't take us to go or try down to sort our stuff out. But yeah, like, we got that McKenna made an awesome tackle, which then forced them to make an error that got us that the penalty turnover. And then I think within the next 10 minutes, we got our first try and we were coming out the block. So, you know, it's a belief thing and it's just a trust in our processes and what we're doing. And I know it sounds a bit boring and like cliche because a lot of people say that, but actually that's massively what it was for us.
Mm-hmm. It's not boring at all.
Like, we're a team that maybe, obviously, we've had COVID and that was a long time that we couldn't socialise as a team, and maybe we weren't the team that we thought we were before, as in like that synergy and that come together off the pitch. Mm. But I really feel like this season we've got a new forwards coach in Chippy. He's obviously got an amazing career himself. Mm. And then obviously and then he brings like what the men's values are, but like what they're like on and off the pitch down to us. And I feel like that camaraderie off the pitch, he's really brought it and brought us together. And that's why I feel like the semis and the final, how we played, is not just about how we've been playing on the pitch, but it's how we've come together off the pitch.
Sure. You go back quite a fair time with England now. Do you go back to the World Tour, World Cup, etc.? Have you... Look, it's difficult to comment on your own performance, but it seems to me you probably never played better.
Yeah, it is really difficult because, like, there's times that people say this is like the season of my life and I'm playing amazingly. But like, there are times previously when I've been in the sevens program, 15s program, and switched between that, I feel like I've been fitter, I've been better, and better than what I am right now. But it's not what people are saying to me. But look, I'm just enjoying what I'm doing, smile on my face. Maybe that actually the pressure's off. Like, obviously, there's no lie, I am one of the senior players of both squads now. Mm. And actually, maybe when I was a bit younger, I worried a lot about what the coaches thought, what they want from me. Maybe I didn't switch off when I went home when I should have done, and like watched more rugby. I was worried about like nutrition, S&C, and all that kind of stuff. Whereas now I'm a little bit like I know what I'm doing. I've just got to. Sure. Do that and not worry about it. And when I come home to Oliver, like that there's that switch off straight away, because you know, when I come home to that chirpy little face, you can't not switch not be 100% Oliver. So yeah,
sure, understood. The league itself, you say it's getting better and better, and it does seem to be sort of surging in terms of standards. Everybody wants a piece of it. Now there's some of the big clubs kind of circling and maybe entering teams, Leicester, Newcastle, etc. How much has it improved since it started? Because it's now becoming kind of like, rather than just two teams being playing well, there's a lot more now who are competitive, aren't there?
Yeah, definitely. And I just think it just keeps pushing the women's game, and it's great. Like, the investment from the RFU, but even the investment from the clubs themselves as well. Like, it's not, oh, we're just going to have a women's team. Like, we want to push our women's team. We want to push the game and be the best we can be. And, like, full credit to Exeter. Like, they've been in our league, I think, 2 years, mm. and they've got to a final. It's amazing how they've done it. And, like, it's super, like, their program's super different than our program at Saracens. But, like, look, they've got themselves to a final. It's now, like, how they can keep pushing to strive to be better and push other teams around them. Bristol was up there. In the playoffs as well. then we like the likes of Harlequins. Like we've met Harlequins for the last three finals, so to have someone different was really good. And it just shows that, you know, we can have a final in a semi-final, and you know that London derby, Harlequins Saracens or Saracens Wasps kind of thing. They're the kind of games that people want to come and watch. And you know, playing Harlequins in the semi at Stonex, the back in the club gave for that. Like, we came out, there was fireworks, there was smoke flares. It was just a really special time up there, and like the boys came down to watch, the coaches came, the men's coaches. So like, you know, it's really pushing, and I feel like even the final, like the men's coaches come to that, Nigel Ray, Lucy Ray, like those kind of people, like they're talking about it, so they want to come and watch. Like, it's not just, oh, we've got a women's team. Like, they really believe in what we're doing. And I know for me as a player, I just want to keep performing at the best I can. So them guys keep standing up and saying, yeah, we want to back women's rugby. We want to put them in the best place we can do.
Is it still at the stage where some people, they have to really sort of struggle for it because they still got other jobs and they have to, you know, they have to put in the time with those, then they have to be a professional on the rugby field. Do you think we're at the point where we may be making that a bit more fair, Marley?
No, I think obviously we're making it a bit more fair, but like I said it in a different interview the other day, and I said about slow and steady, and they said, Marley, I think that's one thing we would never hear come out of your mouth, slow and steady. But like, you know, the investment that people are putting in, like for things like S&C, the training, like even turning up all in matching kit. I know that sounds something really small and little, but it's massive for us girls and stuff like that. So, you know, those things are getting big ticks at the moment. All right, we've got, I say it, like we've got players that are professional, full-time Red Roses, and then we've got players that I still put as professional, but with a little P, because they go to work, but they fit their gym program in, they turn up at evening training, they work their socks off to be the best they can be, to either put the team in the best place they can or put themselves in the best place they can for the team. Like, don't get me wrong, that's professionalism through and through there. They just might not have a full-time contract as a rugby player. But, you know, time will come with that. Like, I feel like the game is growing. It's, women's rugby is like one of the fastest growing sports still at the moment. Sure. And I feel really special to be a part of that. And hopefully one day that we do see that the whole league is professional, but it's going to take time. But we need to make sure that we keep putting on performances like the final, like the semi-final. It's going to get people to come in, watch it and stay watching it.
Sure. Well said. Also now, you've got a holiday, but you've got something much bigger. Well, you've got something really big looming. That's the World Cup, something that you guys have had your eyes on for so long. Is it difficult to not to sort of lose energy by being too excited too early, because you've got a heck of a program before you even get there?
Yeah, we do. And like, look, we're going to have some downtime now. We've got a few weeks off, then we've got coming into pre-season, which is going to be hard and long. Like, pre-season last year was, we came together all as Red Roses and did 4 weeks together, and it was a tough 4 weeks, but look, it put us in the best place we could possibly be. We've had a phenomenal season this season, so we'll do it again this season, and then hopefully a couple of World Cup, like pre-World Cup friendlies, and then go over to New Zealand and hopefully get the job done over there. But right now, I'm just going to enjoy the next couple of weeks, which I hope the rest of the girls will do as well, because I think not just the Red Roses, but the whole league, it's been a long season, and the amount of work that we put in, but also our staff put in, we need to enjoy some downtime and then we go again.
Sure. Just seems to be that New Zealand have sounded the bugle and got every coach they've ever had together to sort of bump up their team. So do you think that you're expecting to face a Kiwi team that's much better than the one you faced in the autumn?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that like that's got to be expected. It's exactly the same. It's France. There's rumours that the coaching structure's changed there. So you're looking at, that's going to be a bit different as well. But look, they're all challenges. They're challenges for the future. Right now, we just need to make sure what we're doing in our house is right for us to get us one on that plane to be in the best possible place we can be to take on those teams. But look, we know France are in our pool game. We've got to make sure we get a job done there. But then we don't know where we're going to meet New Zealand yet. But
sure,
when and where we do, we just need to make sure we're ready for them.
Marley, you've had an amazing season as a team, as an international team and as an individual. I must congratulate you. Just got one more question. What can you tell us about the celebrations afterwards? Because I've never seen any of you guys with a drink in your hand. So did you remain teetotal after the game, or was there a real old-fashioned celebration?
No, absolutely not. There was a real good old-fashioned celebration. For me, it was a little bit hard for me because I actually had drug testing after the game. So the one game you never want to get drug tested on is a final, because, you know, you don't get that changing room aspect of it. But look, Chippy, our forwards coach, has brought in the Tikatonga song. So when we win, we sing it in the change room. I honestly, they put me in the middle with the trophy. And as soon as that song went off, so much champagne, beer and everything got sprayed everywhere. I couldn't breathe. So let alone see anything. But yeah, no, it was a really good celebration. Then we obviously got on the bus back to St. Albans and had a few drinks there. So that's probably why my voice is quite like it is.
Well done. It's really good to hear. Marley Packer, thank you so much for joining us. Have a good break and a good build up to the big one in New Zealand. Thanks a million.
Thank you very much. Take care. Bye bye.
Okay, well, it's great to hear from Marley. Saracens are the team everyone now has to chase, as they once had to in the men's game. We'll revert now to the men's premiership and to the chief executive of the club's body, Premiership Rugby, Simon Massey-Taylor. Simon, we're going to go straight to the key issue here, which I think a lot of us are really hanging on for. Sweet Caroline, will you be banning it from all grounds? It's gone too far.
It's a football song, isn't it? But I can't promise to ban it. I'm sorry, Steve. I can do a few things, but I can't ban that one.
Moving on from Sweet Caroline, which is always a good thing. Simon, when you first joined Premiership Rugby and you gave out your sort of thoughts for the future, you said you wanted to make the whole league way more accessible. In terms of the narrow accessibility of the league, in terms of its players and their access to the media and therefore to the public, we find that some of the individual rugby clubs are incredibly restrictive with their players. Well, do you hope that will improve? Surely it's got to.
Yeah, I think in short, it has to. I'm hopeful it will. I think COVID probably didn't help, actually, as far as access, and there were quite a few barriers put up in place for folks like yourself to be able to access players, whether it was at the ground or even pitch side. But I think sort of coming out of COVID, the relevance of the players and their story and their narrative has never been more important. And so I do think that we are starting to see a mindset change across the board around access. That starts with the players. And I think there's a small handful of them who are really doing a great job in getting out there and telling their own individual stories. But I think others are starting to follow. And then equally, I think we're starting to see a more open mind with the clubs as well, who understand the importance of players, their voice in building a sport. You know, club brands are important, club following is important, but players really are paramount here in selling the sport.
Sure, absolutely. That's good news. Okay, well, we've got our semi-finals at last, and Saracens, Quins, Leicester, Northampton, really looking like two crackers. Is that something for everyone to get their teeth into, Simon?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, we don't employ a scriptwriter here at Premiership Rugby, but if we did, I think they'd get pretty close to what we've got here with these two semi-finals. You know, we've got two derbies, we've got subplots here with rivalries between players. We've got three teams who weren't in the semi-finals last year. They've all got their individual stories, and they're all massive clubs. So I think this weekend is just another great step in an amazing season. You know, this season's had a brilliant story. And it's all really building up to the final now. So any of those teams really are going to be, are going to draw a massive crowd for our final and showcase rugby at its best.
With reference to your words that you'd think that the whole tournament could be sort of double its size, and you're clearly with your colleagues going to boost it. I know it's not fair to compare everything with French rugby, but I noticed in Nice recently that they've got their two semi-finals in Nice on the same weekend. The city of Nice is plastered with marketing. Do you think that there might come a time when the two semis become sort of monstrous enough to give it that treatment?
Yeah, it's something we're looking at actually over the next few months. We're looking at generally what our big game strategy should be. Now, clearly we have some marquee moments already. There's Twickenham's game, there's Harlequin's game at Twickenham at Christmas. Saracens have started to do big games at Spurs home ground. And now we're trying to work out how we can punctuate the season more with big games. And the obvious question is to whether the semis becomes that big game moment. And building up to this Nice semi-final for the top 14, it looks incredible. I know that they recently held them in Marseille, which obviously was the host of the European finals a few weeks ago. And those types of destinations are brilliant for hosting big events. And so that's one of the questions we're going to try and answer over the next few months is to when and how we can grow our big games, and whether the semi-final is one of them.
And Simon, you've been quoted as saying that you'd like the final to be boosted up to the status of, in your words, a national monument, something which I think most people would totally agree, and that it deserves to be. Where do you start with that, and what in by what means can you sort of boost it up there, almost like a rocket?
Yeah, I think any cup final in any sport has the opportunity to capture the nation's imagination. And we know that there's a large rugby audience that exists. You know, they turn out to watch the Six Nations every year. And there's plenty more fans out there as well. So we want to try and make this a must for all rugby fans, but also big eventers. And we think we've got a lot of those core ingredients there already. And I can guarantee that this final will be one of those. It's got the narrative. It's got the stadium. It's got the occasion. It's got that national moment. People want to come to Twickenham Stadium. Twickenham Stadium is a hard place to get tickets a lot of the time. And so that bit is key. And clearly just trying to layer on the jeopardy of what this moment means. You know, this means a huge amount, not only to the players, but the fans there. And so all those levels are important. So I think our core ingredients are good. And then it's about distribution. And so that's why the ITV partnership that we announced earlier on this year is so important, because this year will be the first time that the Premiership final is on free-to-air TV. Mm-hmm. And that will just help us grow. That will help us grow our numbers. And I think, you just need to sort of look back to last season and the travesty, really, that the Quinn's Exeter game was played in front of, unfortunately, only 10,000 people in the stadium. And not enough people saw what an amazing showcase that event is. And so, building back up, free-to-air TV, pumping Twickenham Stadium with the clubs that are competing in the Premiership, we think we've got a lot of the ingredients there to really build it.
In terms of what's just in the recent past, and you mentioned COVID and everything, we've got a cut in the salary cap now, which has gone from 6.4 million to 5, which is a significant cut. I mean, I think people understand why you've made it. Also, some of the attendances this season have been somewhat shaky. Are we actually fortunate that all the clubs managed to get through the COVID period?
Yes, in short, we are. And I think it's testament to the resilience of the clubs, their owners. We have debt of gratitude to the government as well, helped us with their winter sport recovery plan. And so all those things have kept the 13 current Premiership clubs alive, frankly. But it's not over, as you reference. I think they've got over this initial hump of the last 2 years, but the consequences of COVID and that financial shock is more long lasting. We're looking at really a sort of 5-year recovery, really. for the sport generally and across all aspects. So I think, you know, therefore everything we do now is focused or has one eye on trying to make sure that we grow back sustainably.
Do we have to be patient in that time? Because, I mean, some of us and fans, etc., who realise how big it can be, who thrilled to the sort of phenomenon of full crowds, packed crowds, etc., and the tribalism, etc. It's quite an impatient feeling waiting for it to bounce back. Will we have to show patience?
Well, I think the crowds have come back or are coming back. You know, I think we've cumulatively got over 2 million people now. I think we obviously, it was slow at the beginning of the season and with that hiatus over Christmas with various degrees of lockdown, et cetera. But people are coming back. And I think now we look to next season and clubs are on sale with their season tickets. And I think that the large majority of them are getting back to normal levels again. So, you know, that starts the recovery and that's good. And in fact, actually some clubs are even having to take their tickets off sale, for example, Harlequins. So I think the demand's there. People are getting back into the rhythm of coming to and being feeling more confident coming back to sporting events, you know, and so we move on. So I think it has been a shock. It has been a jolt. But I think long-term, I think we're going to build back and then build from there.
Do you? I mean, I think probably we're too. We go back to history too often in rugby, perhaps, especially you know, the likes of me have been around a bit. But do you think that it's important for modern day fans to grasp the history of this league, the kind of heroism of the whole division? Because it started from scratch. There was no blueprint. It was a wing and a prayer. The RFU had not laid down anything. Suddenly, people said, oh, blimey, the game's gone pro on September the 1st, 1995. We didn't even expect that. So suddenly, you've got to go from naught to 100 in about 2 seconds. Do you think it's important to remember that? Because it is not the premier league in football, which has been going donkey's years and was always pro. It is still, in those terms, relatively youthful.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And yeah, you know, I think you've got that there's been an entrepreneurial spirit, frankly, within the club system since the professional era, really. They were pioneers, those people that initially backed the clubs, took that bold move into professionalism. Of course, there were loads of mistakes that were made along that journey, but it wasn't without an appetite for risk and moving things forward and trying to move the dial. And there were loads of moments around that. You know, one of them was partnering with BT Sport, actually, which in itself was essentially a sort of startup venture for BT. They hadn't been in TV previously. And again, they helped us massively build the sport of club rugby. So I think clearly people get frustrated with the pace of change. Clearly it's quite easy to compare ourselves to other sporting leagues that may have just started or have been around for a long time. You know, they're obvious comparisons, but I think it hasn't been for the lack of an entrepreneurial spirit that's been seen across the clubs over the last 20 odd years.
Rightly or wrongly, I think people still see Premiership rugby and its insiders as a sort of kind of gnarly old club, veterans, benefactors, grumpy, who don't agree with about much, etc. Have you got enough, or will you be ejecting sort of outside expertise, people who are brilliant at possibly one discipline to augment the whole thing? Because now and again, you think it's the same people talking inside as it always was, and it'd be nice to hear sort of experts on a certain topic, be it marketing, finance, technical, or whatever.
Yeah, I think that was, there was an important chapter really when CVC came in, because the clubs did believe at that point that, you know, bringing some external influence and capital was a way to bring on further growth. And clearly we've had, you know, the last 2 years have been an almighty sort of false start, really, as far as growing the league because of COVID. But really that appetite and that expertise and that network that they bring is really useful and really valuable. And so, you know, in short, yes. And, you know, with that investment comes our ability to to invest in people within the league and also lean on you know, external advice and experts to help us grow this. So, you know, in short, yes, and I think that was an important chapter when the owners acknowledged that bringing some external influence would be a positive thing.
Well, that was a great man, Simon. Stuart, we were both listening to that. Don't think Sky got much of a mention there in the television stakes. Maybe I missed it.
No, a couple of decades just rewritten from history, almost like a Sovietization of it. Joking aside, I do think Premier Rugby needs to be careful. BT are doing a fabulous job, and I wouldn't decry them in any way. And I think it's worth saying, I haven't been with Sky in any capacity for 3 years, so there's nothing personal. But Sky did a huge job picking up professional rugby from absolutely nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I just think Premier Rugby, one day BT might not want to be their partners. And if anyone at Sky was listening to that, they'll probably say, well, thanks for the loyalty and thanks for the friendliness. And I think, you know, you actually want the opportunity of having more than one partner. I don't think that was very smart. But
also, you played in a couple of these, the big finals. They weren't the Premiership finals then, but they were very, very meaningful cup finals. National monument. It sounds nice that the Premiership final should be a national monument, but there's a lot to do before it gets here, I'd say. What's your opinion?
At the moment, it's fantasy. I mean, look, the cup, be it the John Player Cup, the Pilkington Cup, was a cup that had, because the game was amateur, you know, you had, Steve, what, 128, 64 teams started. So there were dreams. Mm. And by the time you'd got to the final, there's always been a little story somewhere. So what it was a sort of a baby, infinitesimally small version of the FA Cup. And when Simon talks about a sort of national monument, you know, I know the FA Cup's not what it was, but that's what comes straight to your mind, isn't it? You know, yes. The FA Cup. But that isn't just about the half a dozen clubs that might win it. It's about going all the way through to Hereford, to Bristol Rovers, to all sorts of possibilities. And if you don't have the roots there, then it just becomes, you know, let's be honest, the Premiership final is between 13 clubs and there isn't that much intrinsic support for the club game. Despite what Simon said, we remain an international game. To make the club game greater, you have to ensure that the edifice is deeper and stronger. You have to look at France, where you've got 50-odd professional clubs. Now, we know only 10 or 12 could possibly end up in the final. And in the top 14 final, they're just not going to be good enough. But what it does, it enables the support of the sport to grow on a national level. And whilst we are just 13, 14 clubs, that growth will never occur and it will remain a marginalised final. And that's a reality. And that, in the long term, is the issue. If club rugby is going to grow, it has to grow deep. At the moment, it wants to dazzle and it thinks that having a dozen super teams will change the face of the game. It will not.
Okay. There's just another thing that, you know, we were very enthused by our European experience last week in Marseille. We weren't too enthused by the travelling, but the match and as you rightly said, afterwards, a great match of contrasting styles, etc. The Premiership, the cap, the salary cap, has gone down by 1.6 million. It's a lot of money and a lot of good players there. Do you think we're going to have a fallow period in terms of English teams in Europe? Because that is a big reduction.
Possibly for a year or two, but in the long term, Steve, I think there's a real bonus. And that is, I think we'll have to focus even harder on our academy system. I don't think culturally England is a rugby country, and it's always been behind New Zealand and in many ways Wales, but Wales don't have that many players. But New Zealand, Wales, South Africa, to some extent France as well, they have a cultural drive. And I think our academies now have an opportunity to really create a generation of English players and English coaches who understand the game. And I sometimes think there isn't quite the understanding still after 20 years of professionalism that there is in some other countries. There's not an instinctive feel for the game. And instinct is not something you're born with, but it's you're coached into instinct from an early age. So I'm not pessimistic about that, Steve. I accept that for a year or two, whilst the academies get going, then we could be at a disadvantage behind the big French clubs and the Irish provinces. But if we get it right, then I can see England flourishing, perhaps doing better with a £5 million wage cap than 6.4. And the other thing is, these are times when economic growth is difficult. We shouldn't be looking for it because we're putting ourselves under pressure when we're looking for more and more money. We've got to look at ways to sustain the game without looking for profit. Simon said himself, it is not a sport that is geared towards vast profit making. And I agree with him. But if that's going to happen, we've got to stop thinking less about salary caps and more about the roots of the game and the academies. And I think that's the future for the English game. And hopefully it's a bright one if we learn our lesson.
Very good answer. I think that was some wisdom there. We're going to go on to the semi-finals in a second. Let me ask you just to have a little quick look back through the season. There was no relegation. Your old club escaped, would have escaped, only just escaped.
Steve, from where I am, they're morally relegated and Bath should hang their heads in shame. It's been appalling. They're relegated, even though they're playing next year.
Also, they'd recently, or not so recently, introduced Edward Griffiths, who, in my opinion, is an excellent man on the for all types of Premiership clubs, whether they're great or whether they're struggling. And we thought, well, that means Mr. Craig is loosening his grip. There was talk of them moving away from their palatial training headquarters to somewhere a bit more mundane. There was talk of a big ruckus there and all the names changing. Suddenly, it's Griffiths who's gone and most of the names have stayed the same. Did you find that very bizarre?
Bath are undoubtedly the worst managed team on the field and possibly off the field in the Premiership, and it's translated through the results. Ed Griffiths is a tough guy who's been in the cold face. He's done great things. He's demanding. If you said to me, Ed Griffiths or the entire Bath management, I'd have chosen Ed Griffiths. I find it bizarre. And if I were a Bath fan with a season ticket, I'd be feeling pretty low at the moment.
I might have chosen him as on-field captain as well, but there we go. That's just on the subject of lucky clubs. There's nothing lucky about the four semi-finalists. Two great matches. Stuart, you wrote an excellent piece last week. I'm sorry to keep on buttering you up, but on the contrast between La Rochelle and Leinster, and why Leinster, however attack-minded they may be, however they keep the ball moving with fast play, were actually hauled down by someone who didn't want to play that way. Will that be the same? What is at stake in the semi-final, say between Saracens and Quinn's, a fast-moving team, and also from Leicester versus Northampton, who are a fast-moving team? Are the same sort of things at stake there?
Yeah, I'll start with the East Midlands derby, Steve, because I think the contrast is greater there. I think the Leicester pack is so much superior to the Northampton pack. Northampton are going to have to engage in a sporting form of guerrilla warfare. I've heard their players say, we're moving away from a Big 12 crashing up over the gain line. It's almost like they're believing that they can play at pace laterally to create and find holes. It's fascinating to think that they've got a chance. Chris Boyd's Hurricanes team did it when they won the championship, but they did have the likes of Bowden Barrett there, and that made things easier. I think they're going to come at Leicester and try and play at 100 miles an hour. But that's all well and good if Leicester say, OK, let's play that game. Leicester aren't going to play that game. And I think, and I wrote it today, I think Leicester will look to drive lineouts, to work Northampton in scrums, to commit men to break down. And by that, they'll gain penalties and territorial pressure. And there will be flashes from Northampton because they're playing that sort of rugby, but I can't really see them getting beyond the 50-minute stage before Leicester turn the screw on them. And I don't think Northampton have got another game plan as Ronan O'Gara had to bring down the big Lions of Leinster.
They have actually, though, got one of the... first of all, I mean, I hate to... rubber stamp Eddie Jones's selections out of the blue, but Tommy Freeman clearly looked like a player. Also, I mean, they have got one of the best kicking fly halves in rugby. Could they not just batten down the hatches a little bit, or are you saying their pack is just not good enough even to last 20 minutes?
I just think they've got to hold on to as much ball as possible and run Leicester off their legs. Fast rugby can be structured rugby, but it has to have... You can't win any game. You know, Jonesy, you watch enough rugby without foundations. You can't. And I just think there's a difference between the two packs. Chris Boyd said after they smashed Newcastle, it's all well and good, but our worst two performances of the season have been against Leicester. The best... set piece and structured pack in England has been Leicester all season. I don't think there's any coincidence there. And brilliant as I've been on the eye with 6 bonus points in their last 7 games. Rugby's not the theatre. You can't just go out there and put on a brilliant show. There's always someone from the audience going to come up and put a spoke in the whole production and ruin it. And I think Leicester have that capacity to just put their big size 16 boots into the Northampton game plan, slow it down and dominate the game. And also, Leicester have a very aggressive press defence. And if Northampton are playing going backwards from their 22, Steve, it's a panacea for turnovers and tries. So I think it'll be quite high scoring. I think Northampton might score 20+. But I could see Leicester going 40-50.
Well, don't forget that on Saturday against Newcastle, who did play with guts, Newcastle scored 4 tries, including 3, while which were basically turnover tries and by people trying to play too fast and too speculatively. So,
well, I haven't seen the game, Steve, but if Newcastle are doing that to Northampton... Northampton have to play that way to win. I mean, where do you stand on what's going to happen if Leicester are turning them over in Northampton's own half?
I totally agree. I will say, not from a technical point of view, that it was lovely to be there. The atmosphere was fantastic. Some of the players were leaving, and the players, the fans all came on the ground afterwards. They are a great club, great community club. Yeah. They were the first to make a profit in the professional era. God, that seems a long way ago. Chris Boyd's off, but they got some tough old boys there. They've got Courtney Laws. I do feel that Leicester should be the winners. But it's an East Midlands derby, and I guess you never know. So at least it'll be a big game, packed out. I wouldn't be surprised if there's the odd shade of card, yellow or possibly something nastier.
Oh, let's hope so.
Yeah, let's not let our secret wish that there's a big punch-up come to the surface. Saracens and Harlequins, not the two blood brothers, not the two lovers of rugby. Again, do we got a stylistic difference there? I know people think there is. I still think that Saracens can play good try-scoring attacking rugby, but narrow favourite, Saris?
Clear favourites, a home advantage, the different surface for Quins. And I think they just have a little bit of edge up front. What's interesting, Steve, they're both quite structured teams, but people forget about Saracens, the quality and accuracy of their back play. And I fully agree with you. You know, I think if Farrell and Daly link up, they're doing some very, very clever things. And Goode's brilliant at the back. Saracens are underestimated behind. And Harlequins are underestimated up front.
Yes.
So it really, Harlequins have got to have one hell of a game up front. And if they do, I think they got a bit more chance than Northampton because their pack is stronger and they have this facility to score 15, 20 points in the drop of a hat. I mean, Exeter got 47 and Harlequins didn't seem that concerned about the number of points they conceded from close range tries, which would worry me because Saracens, I think, will play that sort of game. But for all the concerns about 47 points, you know, Smith and Dombran created three wonderful tries and they can do that. So Saracens have got to lock them up and they've got to close them down and they've got to put the squeeze on them. They will come up fast, but Smith, Kerr and Esterhazen tend to be better when they're playing in the faces of opponents. When Harlequins played Gloucester, Twickenham, I was HQ for that game. Gloucester didn't press their defensive line very fast. And that axis of Smith and Esterhazen struggled because they were doing things 5 metres from the gain line. So I'll be really interested to see whether Sarri say, come on, we're going to just try and tear lumps out of you, or we're just going to see what you do off a slower platform. It's fascinating. And there's no guarantee Saracens will do what they always do, because in Mark McCall, they've got, I think, the shrewdest coach in English club rugby by a distance. And they will look at Harlequins, I think, like Ronan O'Gara looked at Leinster, and just try and pick apart a few things that can make the difference. I think it's a fascinating game because Harlequins have got amazing firepower. Saracens have got an all-round game. And also, the edge is going to be real. Harlequins are the defending champions, but they won the championship when an awful lot of Saracens' so-called friends in Premiership rugby were very keen to see them go down. I felt, like you, Steve, I felt Saracens' biggest problem was they actually were too far ahead of everyone. Had they been a mid-table team, I don't think there would have been the same stink about it. They made mistakes, of course they did. But I think Saracens, knowing the way they think about things, will want to really make a point, not just against Harlequins, but against every other team in the Premiership. More than any side, I think they will be desperate, even Leicester, more than Leicester, to win this title, and it's going to make it a really serrated sort of afternoon, I would say, at Stone X.
That sounds good, and we've got the very man to report on it. Mr. Barnes will be there for the Sunday Times. Just very briefly, we're going to go on to, or not very briefly, we're going to go on to the URC. They've now reached the semi-final stages, Stuart, as well. Leinster against Glasgow on Saturday were clearly suffering the ill effects of their defeat in Europe. They only scored 76 points against Glasgow. So they appear to have recovered quite well and were without Johnny Sexton. So must be favourite, Stuart, against the Bulls at home.
Yeah, they're at home. If they were playing at Loftus with a big Bulls pack, you'd think it's going to be a tough old tight game. But Leinster have to be favourite there. I'll be fascinated to see whether Leinster have learnt some of their lessons from that final defeat against La Rochelle, because the Bulls can apply physical pressure in the same way that Skelton and Antonio did. So I find Leinster maybe the most fascinating team along with Saracens for the rest of the season, because it will give us a clue as well about Ireland's capacity to go to New Zealand and win and stay right at the top of the international game. So that Leinster Bulls game is really one to keep an eye on for short-term and long-term reasons.
Sure. The other final is, incidentally, the one account at the Leinster game. This is my one-man campaign to stamp out modern rubbish in newspapers. One account said that Dan Sheehan bagged a brace. No, he didn't. If he bagged a brace, it meant he shot two pheasants. He didn't bag a brace. He scored two tries. Why not just say Dan Sheehan scored two tries? Then we know what you're talking about.
But, Steve, you're absolutely right. I'd like to think, because I loathe that word, I don't understand it, and in 20 years plus of commentating, I never used the word brace. But I would say any game of rugby, anywhere in the world, if someone scores two tries, they've bagged a brace. The commentators do it all the time. It's the biggest load of nonsense ever.
Well, exactly.
But there again, you know, it's still an upper class sport, isn't it? We're all out shooting pheasants.
Well, hang on a minute. Your one of your books kept on breaking into Latin. I think that's the same. Oh, that's the same. But at least you didn't say bagged a brace in Latin.
Well, that was the influence of my political hero Boris Johnson. You know, I just
of course, Latin, yeah.
When you run out of ideas, quite a bit of Latin, I say.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Stormers Ulster. Stormers will have Steve Kitshoff and Frans Malherbe up front, which is dangerous. Probably too good for Ulster, I would have thought, at home in Cape Town.
Again, it's in Cape Town, and they're a strong team. They're looking pretty good. That could be a very good final. I don't think that South African teams should be playing in Europe for South African and European reasons. But that's as it is, and I can see it being a good final. Ulster deserve a word of credit. I think they've been very good this season. They were massively competitive against Toulouse in two legs. They've gone well. They put away Munster and sort of bringing the circle round again. I think if you're a Bath fan, you're looking at that Munster performance in the big games, and you're thinking, is Johan van Graan really the number one, or is he a sort of a technician as a coach? And you'd be a little bit worried. But anyway, Leinster versus the Stormers seems a likely final.
It does. And actually, I saw the Ulster-Munster game, and blimey, Munster, by their high standards, are not only very poor, but not even very interested, it seemed to me. But that's a fair old look through the season and the regular seasons, and also through the two, looking forward to the two semi-finals. And I think if ever, as Simon Massey-Taylor said, they're going to play the two semi-finals in a big ground as a kind of doubleheader, this would be the one. I can see it being at Tottenham Hotspur, these two, or even even a minor ground at North London. I think there are one or two. Coming up next, the final. I was going to say denouement, but it's not that. God or Goddess of the Week.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stuart, your deity or devil of the week?
Well, normally, can I have more than one, but it's encapsulated in the one answer.
I'm just going to go to the adjudicator there.
Steve, I'm not a religious man. I'm not a believer in God. So I'm choosing an entity. And that entity is the shed.
Yeah.
I got to Gloucester Saturday, and I felt, Sarri's team is terrible. Third team, second team, it's going to be tedious. But the mood was excellent. The shed were in good spirits, and when they started to score lots and lots of tries, they cheerfully mocked Saracens in a way that made you think this is the epicenter of of supporters, a bit of edge with a bit of joy as well. I've always liked the Shed, and because I was a Bath player, it's something that people have been confused about. They think that the Shed and Barnes have never got on. Well, I am going to come clear and say that I have some degree of affection for the Shed as an entity. They are my god of the week.
The Shed is the god of the week. That's fine. The adjudicators have given me the thumbs up. That's very good. So that's about 10,000 gods of the week.
Well, that's another thing. They're still there. Who's yours then?
Well, it's I'm going to just have one person, I think. It's first of all, as I say, I don't like agreeing with Eddie, but Tommy Freeman is a massive contender. So too George McGuigan. The poor lad, on Saturday, he drove for the line, was about to score the try which would have made him the joint top scorer in the whole Premiership. He was stopped illegally and a penalty try was awarded, but obviously didn't go to George. So he came only second to Max Malins. But what a player, Tommy Freeman too. But obviously, I think this week it's going to be someone from the Premier 15's final. It's got to be Marley. I think they come to the stage now where they give her the player of the match before the game because it saves waiting. Marley Packer is my goddess of the week, steaming on now towards the World Cup build-up and the World Cup itself. So we've got the collective of the Shed and the individual that is the great Marley Packer. Thank you to Stuart, thank you to Simon and to Marley. Been great talking to you all and to get those insights. And we look forward to regathering next Monday for another episode of The Ruck.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.